You miss us?
Dwayne, where were you last week, man?
I was off the grid, you know, every once in a while.
Aruba?
Undisclosed location.
Swimming in Aruba?
Undisclosed location. Yeah, every once in a while I get called to do a thing in the real world.
Got to see a guy do a thing.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a vacation. You weren't sloughing off.
No, me? Never. Recon. We call it recon.
We call it recon. I was in Russia or maybe China. And you don't know, man. So neener, neener.
It's about right. It's about right.
I don't know that song.
I just made it up. All right, guys. It's been 2 weeks. What the heck happened?
A few things. First thing we want to talk about is a relay attack against Windows. So Windows starts the order.
What is a relay attack, pray tell?
So relay attack is classically where you take some form of credential. So some service is reaching out to you and attached to it is a credential. So it could be... Mm-hmm. You are a domain controller reaching out to you as a print server, and there's a credential attached to that. And that was actually when we had the printer nightmare. That's what was happening before, was you'd reach out to the printer service, right, and that printer service would reach back to you thinking you're a printer, and it has attached to it these super user privileges, and you would then just steal them and use them to do other things. So that was a relay attack.
Okay.
But there's hundreds of these types of attacks, and more of them coming out every day. So there's a new one out. So and we've talked about several of these in the past, but now there is one with the DFS distributed file system on Windows, which Patrick and I know very, very well.
So what does this mean? Like, how does a hacker actually use it?
With a relay attack, what you need to do is coerce a service, hence why this one's called the DFS coerce, but coerce a service into doing something. And it's typically either coercing a service like a Windows computer to reach out and do something on a remote box or reach back to you. When you get those credentials, then you'll take them and you'll relay them back to sometimes the same computer remotely, sometimes a different computer, and get, you know, whatever privileges that relayed account had. So, you know, to break that down a little bit. You know, in the print nightmare world, you as a user could say, hey, I want you to go print, you know, Mr. Domain Controller. For those of you who haven't maybe been following along with Security This Week or aren't network administrators, right? If you have a massive Windows network, you typically have a domain controller.
Right.
Domain controller is like a clearinghouse
like
for all
machine.
The accounts. Yeah, right. Has access to everything, knows all the users, knows all the hashes for the passwords, that sort of stuff.
And it's really just a server. It's not something that you're going to sit in front of and use to surf the web.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But it, you know, in a network, if I go to access a resource like a printer, typically that type of authentication goes through a clearinghouse for whether I have rights to access that printer, etc.
Okay.
In the print nightmare world, what would happen is you could reach out to the domain controller and say, hey, I want to go print, right? And if the domain controller had a printer service installed, which was default on Windows, it would say, okay, cool, where do you want to print? You'd say, oh, I want to print off the printer that's on my local computer. And it would relay back to you, usually super user privileges. And then you'd say, okay, instead of printing, forget about that. I actually want to access this file, or I want to add a user to this to my local computer as an administrator.
Yeah, I got that from your previous description, but how is somebody going to use the distributed file system to hack?
Ah, so this one's interesting. So here again, you know, sort of the do I need to worry about it upfront to our normal sort of listener. If you're not managing a corporate network and you don't know what DFS is and you're not using the distributed file system, then I'd say you don't need to worry about it. It's not something that's installed on Windows by default. So you at home... Okay. With your Windows 10, 11, whatever computer, are not going to have DFS up and running and need to worry about this.
Okay.
So that minimizes a surface attack.
But the trick, the way I would add to Dwayne's description is, imagine I manage to get into a building because I'm delivering pizza. And then when I get in the elevator, I drop the pizza and say I'm here to like check the server.
Ah, yeah. Okay. So it's really a fake a fake.
You got to let me in because I'm going to deliver this pizza. Then I throw the pizza away and I turn my shirt inside out. Now I'm
no, you don't.
Tech.
You eat the pizza. Are you kidding That's me? True. You're going to eat the
I've
pizza.
I've never
Patrick.
Seen Patrick throw a pizza on the floor. You,
who throws 100%. A pizza on the floor, man?
Actually, I would show up ahead of time having already eaten the pizza.
There you go.
The double you, sausage actually, extra cheese pizza that Patrick
You're carrying
orders.
An empty box. It's empty because you ate it in the car before they let you in.
That's right.
But it smells like pizza.
So yeah, let's say you're an Uber Eats driver or a pizza delivery guy, and this is a really good analogy. You get in the door. Once you're in the door, you change into, you know, the IT guys, you know, you unzip
your... You throw on your Dell shirt.
Yeah, you throw on your... That's right. You throw on your polo shirt, and, you know, you walk in and you say, hey, I'm the new guy. I'm here to fix your computer or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, you go to the front desk, they give you credentials to get to the floor. Yeah. And then when you get to those floor, you do something else. You're not with the credentials.
All right. So what – and this says it can completely take over the Windows domain. So does that mean it has access to everybody's computer and it can shut them down and steal stuff? And
yeah. It can. So what will happen in a domain – so a little bit about this distributed file system. So the distributed, there's one of the big problems with large networks is having the right files at the right place at the right time. So if a user wants to edit a file or play with a file in, you know, site A, and they're collaborating with a user in site B, you know, the file doesn't exist in multiple locations. And if you have slow links between those sites, well, you know, it's hard for you to then work together. So lots of people have used there are you know, applications out there that can do this. Patrick and I actually used to work with a company that did this type of replication very well. But there's one built into Windows called DFS.
Right.
So DFS was designed originally to replicate around login scripts. So for those of you who are old enough to remember login scripts in Windows, when you'd log into Windows long, long, long time ago, you'd have a login script that would run and that would do things like map your home directory and map your printers and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you know, it's a lesser used feature, but DFS then morphed over into, hey, what if I could replicate a bunch of files? Like everybody's home directories to multiple sites. Yeah, that's
marketing directories, sales brochures. So the executive jumps on a plane to go from New York to Tokyo. And when they get to the Tokyo office, their home directory is already there.
Right. And that way they have access to all of the data and it's much quicker and they don't complain, that sort of stuff.
Okay, great.
So if you're leveraging this system... of DFS to replicate files around. This feature. What you can do now is force that system to try and reach back out to you as a DFS endpoint. So you make what's called an RPC call, a remote procedure call, to the DFS manager.
So this can be done remotely. You don't actually have to be in the building.
You can be in the network.
It's a good point. You don't have to be in the building, but you do have to be on the network. So a remote procedure call just means remotely off of the computer you're trying to manipulate. But I do have to be within the boundaries of the firewall.
So how did you get the credentials to get on the network?
So that's the thing. You don't need credentials. Like if I plug in, if I were to go to any large company on the planet right now and take my laptop and plug it into any conference room, I'm on their network. Like I don't need credentials to get on
badges.
The network. I can get
you
an
don't
IP
need
address.
No stinking badges.
Right.
So you could sit in the lobby and get on their guest Wi-Fi network that doesn't have access to everything.
If they have it routed.
Yes. Yep.
So how did this discovered? How did the hackers exploit it if they couldn't get on the network?
Well, so that's the thing, is this is leveraged in what's called a privilege escalation. So typically you've already got a foothold inside of an organization, whether that's an implant, which is, you know, take the pizza delivery scenario, right? Patrick goes in there and instead of, you know, flipping over his shirt to be a Dell shirt, he takes a little Raspberry Pi and he plugs it in behind a printer and then walks away, right? Now, at this point, it's connected to the network. It's online. It's beaconing out and he can do whatever he wants because he's on that network. Now,
Dwayne, come to my house, I'm going to search you for Raspberry Pis, okay?
We deliver them with drones now.
Don't take it personally.
So one of the things you have to understand is that most breaches start with a remote access, you know, Trojan or remote access, in other words, getting in. And then privilege escalation is what makes it bad.
Yeah.
Right.
The worst hacks are ones that give you both. They give you high privileges with the initial entry. But yeah, most of the time when you attack a system, you have to get two things. You have to get on the network, which is one exploit, and you have to get elevated privileges, which is another exploit.
Wow. So this has been in Windows LAN Manager, NT LAN Manager. This has been in Windows since when? Like the 90s? How long is this?
Most likely. Yeah, DFS was invented, what, in NT 3.5.1 time frame-ish? So, yeah, long time. Long time.
Holy crap. So this has been out there in the wild?
Yeah.
Exploitable? So is it?
Yep.
Was it a 0 day recently?
Well, so it's interesting you say that, because it's almost like, and we've seen this over the last, call it 12 to 18 months. You know, people have started looking at Print Nightmare and saying, oh, well, I can actually make this RPC call, remote procedure call, and have it come back to me. And then I can figure a way to take those credentials and use them again. And then we went, wow, that's novel. That's really cool. Nobody's done that. And then somebody said, well, wait, can I do that with the encrypted file system? Oh, wait, yeah, I can do it with the encrypted file system remote procedure call endpoint. And now they found, can I do that with DFS RPC endpoint? Oh, yeah, now I can do it with the DFS RPC endpoint. So,
yeah.
Why on earth would anybody be running a Windows NT domain controller in 2022? It sounds like it's just full of holes.
Well, it's tough. I mean, you know, Linux has its own issues, but it's tough in that a lot of this technology was built multiple decades ago, and it was built to be an open framework, right? Install it, get it up and running as quick as possible, and then worry about locking it down.
And compatible.
Yeah. Right. Basically, the philosophy that people are inherently good. Nobody is going to start sniffing our packets and looking for endpoints.
Never thought that for a second.
Wow.
You and my wife.
Patrick. Wow.
You and my wife. So, I think given an opportunity, people will do the right thing. But if people are desperate, you know.
I think it's the majority of people will do the right thing, but there's always someone out there who's going to pee in the pool.
Well, yeah. But I mean, it comes down when somebody's desperate and they need something and the only way to get it is to steal it.
Well, and I think we're going to see more of these style of attacks. Well, because we see the mindset of the zero-day creator and the hacker now looking at all these RPC endpoints, and there's literally thousands, if not tens of thousands, of these RPC endpoints running on your Windows computer that you don't even know about. So,
they're super convenient.
Yeah.
They are super convenient.
And therefore,
not secure. Not the friend of security.
Yeah. But I kind of think that if you're an IT guy and you're managing a Windows domain, don't you have all that stuff turned off or locked down?
Oh, my God.
I mean,
isn't that
your job?
That's the cutest thing
you've ever said.
I know. It's adorable. That's your worst nightmare, Carl. That's your worst nightmare.
He thinks everybody's good. Isn't that cute?
And he's like, just turn it off.
He has no idea.
Come to Quincy.
Oh, that's funny. So seriously, you don't think that anybody in 2022 who runs a Windows domain has these things locked down?
So when is the only time senior executives know the network administrator's name in a large company? The only time.
When they call you on the phone to ask you, I think.
No. It's not when you do great things, like, hey, we secured this and nobody broke in.
Right. It's when
you mess something up and I can't print and I'm a senior executive at some large company. And that's what would happen here is if you went, oh my gosh, these endpoints are relayable. I'm going to go shut these off. Now, some executive's files didn't get replicated to where it should have been. And now you get a call going, why is this way? And you go, oh, because it's more secure. And that's when you go look for another job.
So I have an action item for the listener. If you work in a company that has a large Windows domain and you know the IT guy, I want you to, or girl or whoever, I want you to take them to lunch and sit them down and say, you ever heard of security this week? And if they say no, you ask them, If they have secured the
DFS endpoints in their organization.
Yeah, the problem is that it's like having a big old Victorian house and preventing mice from getting in. There's just so many places. You know, you could, I know how to secure a network really well, but it requires gasoline and a match.
Yeah, right. Unplug it.
So unfortunately, it's easier said than done. When you say, well, can't you shut these things off? It's all the services out there have potential right. vulnerabilities.
Right. And so if you're going to, you either use the service or you don't. And if you use it, chances are it's exploitable somehow.
Well, as we said before, you can't exploit this unless you're on the network.
Right.
So there's defense in depth. If they're not on your network, great. Then, right, you know, right. you don't have as much risk. You have insider threats, and insider right. threats are more insidious. We've yeah. had customers we've talked to where they don't want to even think about insider threats.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah because they're like, well, you know, no, we trust our people. Okay. You trust your people the day before they quit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Trust your people the day, you know, an hour after you fired them.
Or, right. you know, an hour after some rumor started going around that they were going to get fired.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And the bigger the company, the more dangerous that is.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's depressing. Well, you got any happy know, news right? for me this week? Right. Dwayne, was there anything
nope.
that was awesome?
Oh, there's so many awesome. Oh, there's this one thing. We'll talk about it in a minute. But there's some really cool stuff coming out.
All right. So let's get to the next one. Shadowy Strava. What is Shadowy Strava? And okay. how did the users spy on Israeli military with fake routes?
Isn't that our Ukrainian delicacy?
Yeah, the shadowy Strava. I'll take a shadowy Strava with
shadowy
a little Cabernet.
Strava. So good.
Yeah.
with a side of Russian tank. Especially
no.
the turret. Just
you know,
the turret.
We don't mean to sound callous. We're just
no. We're callous towards the Russian army. That's what we're callous.
That's right.
It's
fun. Not definitely not the Ukrainians.
No. We're our buddies.
All right. So what happened here?
So interestingly enough, Strava is a workout tracking application. So it tracks your runs. It tracks your run segments, that sort of stuff. So if you're a runner, you're probably using Strava. If you're doing, you know, ultra marathons and that sort of stuff, you're definitely using Strava because it does things like tracks how long you should rest your body and how efficient you're working out.
What
and
if
all
you
that good
sit
stuff.
As a programmer yeah. all day and do coffee you're, cup curls?
But I
like
think
I'm
it's a competitive.
Right
I think Garmin. I think a lot of people use Garmin, and I don't think Strava and Garmin are the same system.
So wait, they are not, but Strava gives you more detail than the Garmin system does. So what happens is, actually that's a very key point, Patrick, because I use Garmin, for example. And when I use Garmin, it tracks my segments and where I run and how fast I run and that sort of stuff, but it doesn't have all of the statistics that Strava has. And initially, there was no pairing between Garmin and Strava. So what I had to do was actually export all my data out of Garmin as in a raw XML file and upload that data to Strava
to Israel.
through their API to Israel. So they could look it over and upload it them. No, so I would upload it to Strava's API and Strava would ingest that data and say, okay, cool, you ran these segments, here's your data. Well, in that process of transmitting the data, now Garmin just directly connects to Strava and all sorts of stuff, but in that process of transmitting data as an XML file, I can change anything I want in there.
Yeah, it's user-provided yeah. data. You're trusting, they're trusting the source of the data, which is you. Never a good practice.
And it's just XML over TCP/IP, so it's
yeah,
basically...
Exactly.
What could go wrong?
You can right. just... formulate that like you could capture the output of it, right? Put a sniffer between you and them and say, oh, that's what you sent. All right, well, let me take yeah. that and I'll change that here and I'll change that here and then I'll upload this as a file.
Yeah. And honestly, they even make it easier than that. In Strava, you can just say upload an XML file and it will Jeez. Upload an XML file. Now you say, okay, who cares? You're going to fake your own running data, you know, whatever, right? You want to mm-hmm. show your friends you ran 1,000 miles. You could do that. But the interesting thing about this is if I run a segment, I can see who else runs those segments.
Oh, sure. You can see who's near you.
So I can say, oh, maybe I want to find a running buddy, right? And I can find other people that run it.
I get it. It all makes sense. So they basically create a running route around a military base.
Yes.
And then they look for all their friends who are also running or walking
exactly.
in that, and they can tell where... the military personnel are.
Where
now,
that
wait.
Is awesome and really scary, but awesome.
Now, that is awesome. Now take that and extend that to world. What if you've created 2 billion running routes and you put them all around the world and you take a look at the users that are running the military base and now see if they're running any of your other 2 billion routes. Now you can track where they go.
Hmm.
Wow.
So if they go to, say, Istanbul on a mission, I can see 6 of those, you know, special Israeli operators who used to run the Israeli base now in Istanbul.
Because they're all tagged running. With a unique ID. You put them in a database
exactly.
and you
yeah.
just well, say, hey, where's Waldo?
Where that gets really scary is you get a Secret Service agent detailed to the White House and they're suddenly in Ukraine. And now you know that the president's probably in Ukraine.
Right. Right.
And so the secret visit no longer is secret.
Wow.
That's bad.
Not where's Waldo, but where's Udi?
Right. So what's interesting about this is just be careful with what services you use. I mean, it's super convenient to say, hey, find me a running buddy, you know, on this military base in Israel. That's nice. However, just be careful. That data can be gleaned by almost anybody on the internet, depending on, you know, if they know how to use those APIs, and most of these services do. So Be careful what data you put out there.
Holy crap. That's crazy.
Awesome.
And it is awesome.
Right?
Crazy awesome.
But very scary. What's the fix? I mean, can these things be fixed so that they can't be abused like this? Or is it just comes with the territory?
The vendor has to fix it. They have to, they have to control for, you know, people doing unreasonable things. And actually the big part of it is you shouldn't be able to see my routes unless I become a friend and I enable you to.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Why would anybody just say, yeah, go ahead, publish where? And why would military personnel say, go ahead and, you know, share my.
Well, they don't. I think it's just an open system.
Ah, all right. So, but you can only see where they're running.
People use apps all the time. They don't know all the features and they don't know all the ramifications. It's just,
right.
You know, they should.
So chances are though, okay, let me put my, you know, people are inherently good and protective and know how to protect themselves. I would think that if you're in the Israeli military and you're walking around a base, you're not on Strava, right?
Well, so
you're not running a route.
You would think that, but I can tell you, I haven't. So I run with my Garmin. Now I'm going to, you know, people will be able to OSINT me, but I run with my Garmin.
What's your ID?
I'm going to run with
what's your username?
Patrick Hines is mine. Right. That's what I like to run at. So,
good luck seeing me run.
It's probably something like go hack yourself.
Right. So I run with my Garmin, and I like to track, you know, speed and segments and that sort of stuff on my Garmin. I haven't used Strava in years, but years ago, I set my Garmin up to auto-upload data to Strava, and it's still been doing it. So occasionally, I'll get a, hey, you got kudos on your run in Strava. And I'll be like, wait, what? I didn't do anything with Strava. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I completely forgot. I got to stop that thing from syncing. So it happens where you're just using your Garmin. You're just trying to track your workout. And, you know, Strava picks that data up because, you know, at one point you signed up for it.
Wow.
I mean, the other interesting thing here, Patrick, I don't know if you went through this article. When I look at you, Patrick, it says, some of the fake uploads may have been used for the purpose of cheating on friendly competitions. We talked about that, right? You can edit any data you want. Or setting up segments to guide others, but at least a set appears to have been malicious with a malicious purpose. An anonymous user with their location given as Boston, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Has set up some fake segments around Israel. I can tell you, Boston, Massachusetts, we're not hacking Israelis. So
wow.
I'm in New Hampshire. I don't know what you're talking about.
All right, let's move on. Chinese hackers, because we haven't talked about China in a long time.
Oh, this article's awesome.
And it's great because it's got Chinese hackers and script kiddies, which is one of Patrick's favorite, you know, denominations. God. Chinese hackers target script kiddies with info stealing Trojan. All right, first of all, I thought script kiddies were too young to use Trojans. Aren't they generally really young?
Did you grow up on the farm?
Yeah, that's me.
So script kiddie is just a term for someone who is not technical enough to have written the script they're using, and right. They just get it off the internet. They typically are low tech. They're very often younger people, but it really just means that they're grabbed the script off the internet and they're using it, and they probably couldn't have created it themselves.
Right. Or understand it, for that matter.
In many cases, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a gateway drug.
It is in some cases, and in some cases it's, you know, it just leads you to use more tools and not understand them. Yeah, exactly. This one's really cool. So take a script kiddie downloading tools to run to do stuff, right?
Which they almost always get infected with something doing that. There's no free lunch.
Right. Exactly. So anytime you download a tool off the internet, if you don't understand all the code that's running there, you're in trouble.
You're the tool.
Yeah, exactly. Your computer's the product.
If the tool is free, you're the tool.
So there's this tool you can download over the internet, which I would not suggest. Wow. Not suggest to download. Called SMS Bomber.
Ooh.
So SMS Bomber, what it is it's a tool that will...
Wow, the download counter's going nuts.
Yeah, you told our audience, don't do this.
Don't go to smsbomber.com.
Whatever you do, don't think of blue.
There's a cherry pie on the counter. Don't touch it. Yeah, right. Got it.
So what this tool does is you have the ability to put in someone's phone number, and it will... just keep sending them text messages. It will denial a service. They'll just keep getting like message after message after message after message.
I wrote a tool like that once, but I didn't mean to.
It was a feature.
Actually, call it SMS Bomber? It was Richard Campbell. Richard Campbell did that. That's one of his stories.
So
he gets a phone call. He's like, I know. Sorry. Okay. So
you're a script kiddie, you're, I don't know, mad at a friend or whatever, and you download this application to just continually keep sending them an SMS message, right? And it's obnoxious, and that's all it is.
It's illegal.
Yeah, it is illegal. Mm-hmm. But behind the scenes, there is a Chinese hacking group who has taken the SMS Bomber executable, and they've hosted it inside of a piece of malware they wrote that is super sophisticated. And the reason I lay it that way is because when you run their malware, it then deploys SMS Bomber out of its malware. So it's almost like they wrote a shell around SMS Bomber that then shows you just SMS Bomber, but there's a lot of other things going on in the background.
Yeah.
What it does in the background is it will install a backdoor that communicates with a C2, which is pretty normal, a command and control structure. It infects the Notepad process. So as soon as you open this, Notepad.exe launches and will be sitting there looking like it's running. You don't see it. It's hidden. But if you were to go to your process list, you'll see Notepad.exe.
Uh-oh.
And in the background, that's actually running their code, their backdoor code. That backdoor code then we'll spin up what's called a DLL host.exe. So if you ever look at your computer and look at the processes running, DLL host.exe.
I'm looking right now.
You ever see Notepad running, by the way, ever on your computer? It's probably a hacker.
Well, I run it sometimes.
Yeah, but honestly, like 99% of the hacking test tools out there launch Notepad. That's like what they do.
To tell you the truth, I'm more worried about the 75,000 processes that Google Chrome has spun up.
Well, yeah, there's that. Anyways. So Notepad launches. Notepad then will inject code in the background, and it creates what's called a DLL host.exe, which DLL host.exe is always running. If you check your computer, you're running DLL host.exe right now multiple times because services run in that process.
Yeah.
But what they do is they actually spin up this DLL host.exe and they do what's called process hollowing. So imagine this. You spin up a DLL, this DLL host.exe, and then you go into memory and you gut the whole thing in memory. You pause the process. You gut the whole thing in memory, and then you replace the code, the assembly, the machine code that was running DLL host with the virus.
You're down to bytes right now.
Yeah.
You have to have compiled assembly. You have to have machine code.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And so they hollow this process, and then they inject the malicious code into the hollowed process.
Oh, my God.
So if you were to inspect it, look for it, whatever, it just looks like a normal process that's running, but unless you were to, like, freeze the memory and start inspecting like the image space that's running, it would be super hard for you to find this.
Patrick, that reminds me of that Halloween where you found a kid trying to steal the gasoline can in your shed, and you killed him and gutted him and stuffed him with leaves and put him in a chair in front of your house. Remember that?
Yeah, the formaldehyde helps.
And now everybody's.
No, wait a minute. You stuffed them full of Snickers bars. That's what you did. You said, take one.
I would never give away a Snickers bar.
That's true.
Those are for me.
Yes.
That's how I know that story's fake news.
Okay. That is pretty incredible and quite ballsy, actually.
But
it means you got to format the system to get rid of it.
Right.
But this actor also then took AES, which is an encryption standard.
Right.
And then extended it to then re-encrypt their encrypted data so that you couldn't analyze forensically the executable that's running. So highly sophisticated actor targeting script kiddies.
Wow.
Why? Why would you do that? Why would you deploy a nation state actor to target script kiddies?
Well, because they get into other systems that the Chinese government wants to get into.
Well, that's an interesting point. So according to this article, there was a campaign that was run earlier in the year from China against Russia, and they believe that some of the details they found pointed them to do this. So it could be, just speculation here, on the Bleeping Computer team, but it could be what's happening is they found some intel in Russia saying that there were a number of spies in China using these applications and using what's called Tencent and WeChat, which is their chat programs, to communicate. Because that's what this backdoor looks for, is WeChat communications, Tencent files, that sort of stuff. So it looks like the Chinese nation state team attacking their own people, script kiddies, their own script kiddies, looking for this data.
Hey, how's the United States hacking team coming along, guys? Do you know?
Which one?
We obviously have a nation state hacking team, don't we? We must.
We don't call it a hacking team.
Yeah, we can't confirm nor deny. But our
Cyber Command.
Our Cyber Command does a decent job.
We have the NSA and Cyber Command, both commanded by General Nakasone, and they are awesome.
They are awesome.
Cool.
They are.
That's awesome. Good to know.
They're far beyond a hacking team. They're a military organization.
Just the fact that we found this is good news.
Oh, it's impressive. Yeah. It is. It is impressive.
All right, we got a few more stories here. Are we done with this one?
Yeah, this one's good.
Okay,
this one's good.
Now I don't even know how to pronounce this stuff. It sounds more and more like science fiction every day. UNRAR path traversal vulnerability affects Zimbra mail. That's it. Just sounds funny, doesn't it? Zimbra mail.
It does.
A Zimbra male, and you're a Zimbra female. Let's go Zimbra together. No, it's male. M-A-I-L. UNRAR. So is RAR like the zip kind of?
Yeah.
Tool. Yep, so UNRAR is like unzipping.
Yep. Right. Yeah, exactly.
And let me guess. I haven't read this, but let me guess. Path traversal means that the path to the file is obviously goes all the way back to the root. So you could find the root, and if you had access to that with some code, when you UNRAR'd a file, you could go from the root forward and find something that you're looking for. Does that make sense?
Very close. Yeah. Very close. Yeah. So there's this process. Whenever you're trying to, this is hacker advice, people, whenever you're
we
trying
need some
to
music for hacker career advice, hacker career advice. All right. I'll get on that.
Everybody should know the term.
We should just
flipping.
Play static over it. So no one hears.
Wow. Wow.
Right.
So there's this process called zip slipping. So this directory traversal in UNRAR, not a super new thing. Zip slipping is where you take an archive, typically zip. And what if you were to zip up some files? So you zip them up into one, you know, .zip file, and in those there could be a path to where those files should unzip, right? So I may have my entire application. Let's say Carl wrote an application in C#, and there's a bunch of .cs files, and they're in a directory called code. Mm-hmm. When you zip up that directory, if you extract it, it will actually create a directory called code and then put all of the CS files in there. Makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Because you zipped up the entire directory.
That's
well, what
right.
if you were to go into that archive and say, no, the code directory isn't here. It's .../.... code. Well, now wherever you tell it to extract, it's going to actually extract that code directory three directories higher.
But you don't know how many directories higher you are at the time, do you?
Ah, No, you don't. But what you can say is ./... as many times as you want, 1,000 times.
Sure.
And then /Windows. And you'll always be in the Windows directory.
Really?
Because it's off the root.
Yeah, because once you get to the C drive, once you get to the root, you'll go ./.. And it'll say, oh, you're already there.
You're right. I get it.
So it'll stay there, right?
I get it.
Okay. So that's zip slipping.
That's
so
it's career advice right there.
So it's very similar to that with this. What happens is they create a fake archive or fake RAR file that says, oh, what I want to do is extract inside this zip is a PHP file, a web code file. And I want it to be extracted to ./.. Goes all the way back to the root and then comes all the way back into the web client directory for Zimbra. So it can deploy a web page there. So when you send an email with this malicious attachment to Zimbra, and this isn't a Zimbra fault. This is actually a RAR fault on Linux, not WinRAR. WinRAR is actually fine.
All right.
But this is an UnRAR issue on Linux from RAR Labs. You want to update this, by the way. But if you're running Zimbra and somebody sends you an email with an attachment that's a RAR, the first thing it does is verifies, is this a malicious file? Well, to do that, it needs to unzip the RAR.
Oh, man.
And see what's inside. The moment it does that, it deploys the file to the web directory. And now at this point, run whatever you want.
It's like the Outlook preview problem.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Same type of thing. So this is an interesting issue. You know, Zimbra is going to catch a lot of heat for this, but it has nothing to do with Zimbra, honestly. It really is they're leveraging a Linux RAR Labs, you know, UnRAR executable that has this issue. And what you need to do is just update it. You need to update the your UnRAR from RAR Labs. That's all.
All right. So far we've talked about Microsoft. We've talked about Chinese hackers. We've talked about Linux. We haven't talked about Google. Is Google in the news in the last couple of weeks?
Google's always in the news. You know what? Honestly.
But it's more about how awesome they are, right? Than how they got.
Yeah, the Google Threat Analytics Group, who they call the Google Tag. Those guys are like, they're like the super friends of security, security vulnerability discovery. Those guys are awesome.
Now they should be working for the government.
Yeah, well, and I would be surprised if they don't at this point aren't working with the government.
They're doing the government's bidding
for them
by doing good things.
So what's interesting here is, this is more hacker advice. Hey, if you're going to advertise as a hacker that you would hack Instagram and Yahoo, and I was actually surprised, Facebook for $20,000, they'll hack Facebook? It's pretty cheap. You probably don't want that to be such a public site that you get on Google's radar. So that's what happened here is Google started looking around and found a bunch of sites that they shut down that were advertising for, you know, hacking services. Yahoo.com for $20,000. Instagram for $19,990. What a deal. So hacker, here's your hacker advice for the day. If you're going to advertise your services, I wouldn't do it on some public domain website.
Yeah, probably not a good idea.
Don't go to a Google search engine expert and be like, hey, how do I get my site to the top of the searches? You definitely don't want that.
Yeah. Know your audience.
Mm-hmm.
So the headline is Google blocked dozens of domains used by hack for hire groups. So that's what you're talking about. These hack for hire groups, Google found them and blocked the domains.
Right. And now Patrick and I don't have a, you know, secondary income, which is whatever.
So wait a minute.
Speak for yourself.
I didn't know Google was in the DNS business, are they?
No.
Google's in the everything business, honestly. Yeah. But if Google Google has control over whether they show up in search engines, right?
That's
true. So Google say, hey, none of these domains ever show up when you search for them.
And they can turn off your email, that's for sure.
Yep.
And your drive access.
And if you're hosted in Google Cloud, obviously, then they have their own licensing agreements and they can take them down. But awesome. Kudos to those guys.
All right. So Windows, Strava, China, Linux, Google. Who haven't we talked about? Russia.
I think it's the Russians.
Russian hacktivists take down Norway government sites in DDoS and distributed denial of service attacks, DDoS.
Yeah.
So the only thing I've heard about Norway in the news lately is that there was some domestic violence there.
Mm. Yeah, like they had a shooter.
They had a shooter, and I don't know if you know this, but there's a big skinhead kind of white supremacist movement going on.
Really?
Norway.
Yeah. Yep.
See, I don't track politics.
So the Russian hacktivists, now these are people that work for the government, or are they against the Russian government?
No. So Russian hacktivists are like Anonymous would be to the United States, okay. Right? They don't officially work for the United States, but most of them probably live here.
Yeah, okay.
So, and they, you know, purport to do good things for, you know, the downtrodden.
Okay.
So this hacktivist group in Russia called Legion Cyber Spetsnaz RF.
Okay.
That's their Telegram channel where they were advertising sites that they wanted to denial of service, and they were all Norwegian sites.
Mm.
And it seems like there were two main reasons why they were doing this. And the problem is it causes a lot of chaos, you know, right. In Norway, because they're shutting down vital sites to the Norwegian government.
Mm.
Just with denial of service, which, by the way, denial of service is such a low technically challenging thing to do.
Right.
It's honestly like anybody can go DDoS a site relatively easily.
You basically recruit a bunch of computers all over the world to start sending requests.
You can do it with just a single computer now.
Yeah.
There's ways because you can exploit communication channels that allow a single request to really cause the recipient computer to do a lot more work.
Yeah. But a distributed DDoS attack, distributed means that multiple systems.
It's usually it's bot driven.
Yeah.
Yep.
And they just hammer the site with requests until it gets overwhelmed.
Right. Yeah. So you know, it causes a lot of mayhem. It makes it hard for, you know, Norwegian citizens to get access to government, you know, sites and things that they need, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So that's really, it's really more of a statement than stealing data or anything along those lines. And it's mainly for two reasons. One, Norway blocked the transit of 20 tons of goods from mainland Russia. So that, you know, that was one thing that put them on the Russian hacktivist group target list. And secondly, Norway donated long-range rocket artillery systems and 5,000 rounds of shells to Ukraine. So those two reasons have put them on the ire of the Russian hacktivist list. So.
Wow.
And they're liable to not get attacked by them, whereas the U.S. and Sweden and the British and many others are donating similar supplies, but they're trying to intimidate the closer border NATO members.
I'm actually, frankly, surprised that Norway doesn't have better DDoS protection. Frankly, but
it's expensive to do DDoS protection because you have to throw resources at it, and so it really depends on how critical that resource was.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting. It's just, you know, I always assume government, right? Government agencies have all the best of the best.
Right.
And you see, hey, you know, 8 guys were able to shut down this site. You're like, oh, that's sad.
Well, guys, I think the most entertaining story was the Strava story. So we're going to call this show Where's Udi? Users of the Strava running app can use fake routes to track other users wherever they are.
Awesome.
And that, my friends, is a show.
Agreed.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, it's good to talk to you guys.
Yeah, good to talk to you. We'll see you again.
Missed you guys last week.
Totally.
I know, right?
Totally.
Looking forward to next week.
I had to geek out on other things. All right, we'll see you later.
Thanks a lot.
Bye, guys.
Bye.